R22 Tout le monde, antenne École du Magasin, Take You There Radio.
It was 2009. I took a road trip with around 10 artists in this border of Turkey that started from Georgia towards Armenia, Azerbaijan and Iran, and it ended in Istanbul, back in Istanbul, and it was around 20 days. And it was just shocking to be in that geography for the first time. I think it's just the toughest area in the world that I've seen. But besides that, all the languages that were spoken were different from each other, but it recalled some kind of Turkish words to me. For most of those people who know about the Turkish history, that it's kind of broken after the 1900s, it's the language has drastically changed, and it excluded Arabic and Iranian or Farsi words out of it, or Georgian words or Armenian words. But like, the language was becoming more and more Turkish. But at the end, when you hear some old people speaking in Turkey, you kind of relate to these words, which you don't understand, but that's in your kind of linguistic memory. And so when I was traveling, I was kind of like getting inside these languages and outside of it. I wasn't understanding anything, of course, but there were some words that, you know, recalled me, recalled Turkish, even if it's not Turkish, it sounded very familiar. It's like this kind of familiarity with the language that's spoken, but not being able to understand it or going deeper to the meaning. And so I was traveling and I was, you know, making some interviews with people, documenting them. It was like, the subject was not really important, but I was, for instance, asking people to read poems or talk about daily politics within their own language and discuss things. Or I was kind of, you know, going around with my sound recorder all the time, trying to, you know, collect this daily texture of this sonic world that's happening in the public space.
Having this like huge piece of information and trying to decipher it and understand what it meant, because the text is so complex for me, and I think there's a lot of parts of the text that I wasn't quite understanding, but I still felt like reading it was important even though I wasn't going to understand everything. Maybe just the words or the sounds of the words. Like, I feel like for me, and you know, as a vocalist, like the sound of the words were important, and that's kind of gave me an idea of what, how I could start to create sounds. It just gave me like those sounds.
And I realized that I couldn't read the alphabet because it's not Latin, and so I wasn't sure of how to read of what I heard. So I was kind of, you know, my linguistic memory was working maybe harder, and then I was pulled with all these narratives afterwards when I got back to Turkey. And, you know, most of the times the issues we were speaking about was about, like, Armenian genocide or the post-Soviet Union, or, you know, the break after the Ottoman Empire, like this kind of quite sad stories, or, you know, like, or I mean, even basic human rights, like in Azerbaijan and Iran, like daily stuff. So when I came back, I was kind of, you know, my mind was constantly speaking. So I started writing what I heard without writing it into language, but just writing the sounds in these, you know, made up language. And, you know, as I recited back in Turkey, and within time, like, these words, they became more and more Turkish throughout.
And I was interested in it because of the way we might be able to incorporate sort of the sonic language in the text and bring that into instrumental vocabulary, and how that might inform, what we did as what kind of materials we were working with as performers.
I'm always thinking melodically, you know, and I often watch like Mandarin movies without the subtitles and stuff because of the melodic and rhythmic nature of the voice. Well, in movies from any language, really, other than English, because I find so much beauty in the melody and the rhythmic sort of structure of different languages. So for me, thinking about text and then thinking about trying to use my instruments in a vocal way, it's something that I've thought a lot about. And so for me, it's pretty natural to think about sawing away at a cymbal with a screw and thinking about like phrases in the way that someone is trying to speak, someone who's being suppressed trying to speak, someone who's got their mouth, you know, gagged trying to speak or whatever. I'm definitely thinking about that.
I interviewed, like, in Armenia, I did a lot of interviews with old people who were kind of who survived after the genocide. So I was recording, and I get back, and I try to write these stories down, you know, within my own texture of, you know. So I used some of the recordings, but not necessarily. I mean, it was just my unconscious that was kind of flowing, and I didn't know the words, and I didn't know the language or what was happening inside me. But, like, I didn't do it for any reason, so that kept me 2 years that I just wrote, and it didn't mean anything. I wasn't supposed to do anything with them. And after a point, I realized that I'm kind of writing these sounds of emotions that are really intense and about something, but, you know, it doesn't necessarily have to have a syntax, like, it doesn't have to have a semantic.
You have to do it in a way so that you don't sound like you're just making fun of somebody who speaks a different language or something that you don't understand. Like, I feel like that's a line that I'm hoping I'm not crossing, because I'm thinking about the sounds, and that I'm really interested in those sounds and the emotions and expressions that come through that don't come through words, you know, because words are very, you know, there are these like real heavy blocks of information, and then there's emotion underneath that, and I'm just trying to go with like the feeling underneath that. That's more probably vague, but more specific in the same place.
I realized that, you know, after a while, I've been writing all this stuff for 2 years, and, you know, I decided to make a play out of it, and then I kind of formatted into a play, like a screenplay for a theater that was never supposed to be played, you know, acted out, of course. And then I decided that I'll make the house of this play, where this play is like a stage, but it wasn't a stage, it was an installation, and it was like the atmosphere of what all those kind of non-linear narrative meant to me. And then it became more and more objects throughout the years, and I continued writing, and I kind of developed them into objects and installations and then to music. So that kind of a process has started without me knowing or knowing why and how it started.
One thing that's been really interesting and challenging about this project is the number of layers of translation that are going on. There's this text which gets translated into sculptures, which then gets, and then the text gets translated into a different language, and then it's translated into music, and then we have language, you know, kind of challenges with, you're speaking English, it's not your first language, I don't speak any Turkish, we are trying to talk about music, which isn't your medium, but, you know, so there's like a lot of layers of sort of translation going on in this project constantly. Both in the materials and then in the process as well, which has been interesting and hard, but like also provided, I think, it's opened up some possibilities that might not have been there otherwise. You know, when things are, when communication is so clear and direct and immediate, sometimes when you're speaking with another musician in the same language and it's like, sometimes that sort of directness might circumvent possibilities. I don't know. I mean, it also makes some things easier, but I think the layers of translation are interesting. We've been dealing with
Because I was back in Turkey and all, I was kind of translating what I was hearing in my mind. That was residues of this trip, you know, within different languages. It was kind of a translation process to begin with. And then as I moved into space and tried to install what I hear and, you know, like some objects, for instance, like I was reading something I wrote. Of course, like when I'm writing, I'm not reading it. So there's a process, there is some time, and then I go back and I read it. And then when I read it, I realize that it's a form and I just visualized it. And then and I start to kind of, you know, merge elements and material and, you know, form all together. And I mean, it was very instinctual the moment the objects appeared, mm-hmm. especially in the second exhibition. The first exhibition was more about the space of this text, but the second exhibition, as I continued writing, was becoming more and more like residues of these texts into, you know, becoming objects. And later, I mean, recently, with the music part of the first text, because it was structured as a screenplay or a script, there were five characters that were speaking out these words that made no sense. And there were some kind of engagement with the furniture they were in. So there were some kind of clues that showed me that I didn't want to hear this read as poetry on the stage, but I wanted to hear it as music, because music or, you know, sound has its own capacity of, you know, taking you to an imagination of a space or mm-hmm. or a volume or a time.
So first you have to kind of get like a general feeling for the text, and I think that's what we did first, sort of trying to understand the ideas behind it, the concepts, but also the sort of, yeah, like I was saying, the tone and style of the language and sort of emotional thrust of the text, sort of generally. So it's like a very general, you get a very general feeling. Then we went in on a very micro level, and, you know, as you can see in this version of it, we were like, okay, this person talks here, this person talks here, and we sort of broke it down into solos and duos and trios and small ensembles so that it could be translated into performance for musicians. So we were going in a very micro level, but not really about so much content as about like structure. And that was sort of one layer. And then each of us had to sort of work to understand our characters and find some aspects of the text that were salient for us to understand the character, and then translate that into, you know, sonic material. And so there's this sort of zooming in, zooming out, zooming in, going specific, getting general, going structural, getting this sort of emotional feel, moving back and forth between these different registers. And that was kind of the process over 2 years, 3 years, you know. And so at that, at a certain point, we have like the sort of improvisers come in, each of us individually, having worked on things and trying to understand our characters. And then we just have to sort of start playing and sort of making music together and move away from the text. So there's this, like, you have to be close to the text, then far away from it, and close to it, and far away from it, trying to sort of get what you need out of it, but not let it sort of stifle sort of music making by being too married to it. So it's a sort of a balance and a dynamic process.
Because when you read something like a theater play, you kind of are narrated into this meaningfulness of things, and then you are narrated, you know, it's just like a process of you are dictated to some kind of an idea, or you know, it's all your mind that starts working when you are into watching a theater play or reading a novel or something. But like, because all of this didn't have any meaning, then I decided, you know, why would you kind of interpret it or choreograph, or make it into dance or make it into theater? You can play with all these forms, but in the end, as you say, it was pure sound, and then I wanted to see that pure sound into form, and it was like, because it had a presence, the way I kind of had that, you know, coming out, I wanted to just, you know, see it as a form. I mean, it's absolutely like that. It didn't have this representational quality, mm-hmm. That, you know, when you watch a play or when you read something, you are drawn into this representational world of the artist. But I didn't have it there. Mm. I just had like some very organic flow of sounds and forms into it.
In order to not just be a tool for the actual piece, I'm trying to filter everything that I feel from the characters and then make it also my own. I'm trying to become instead of interpreting, in order to make sure that there's power in the character. For me, with this piece, we're not really literally translating anything. I mean, it's based on text that's specific, but the actual text in the way it, I don't understand everything. Like, reading it is a kind of overwhelming experience. And I kind of take that experience of trying to read it and translate that into my character, of being kind of overwhelmed by the text and not quite understanding it. So I don't feel too stressed out about being so literal to everything that's going on, but just trying to take the feeling that I get from the actual words and how they're surrounded by the other characters' statements, and it's more of this sort of nebulous feeling than something extremely specific. I mean, my character, how I feel, is kind of, like a lot of the other characters, a little bit crazy, kind of hysterical, very emotional, and I'm trying to just take those elements and use them within my own voice and not try to enact a character specifically. So
I'm always surprised about how different people sound, like comparing this saxophonist to this saxophonist, or this percussionist to this percussionist. Even when, like, for example, I watch a set of a concert where two drummers are using the same drum set, even the same cymbals, and the way that they touch the cymbal, like, completely transforms the way that the cymbal sounds depending on who's holding that drumstick. You know? But that's kind of the magic about improvisation. That's part of what is so interesting to me about music in general, is that, like, people handle their instruments differently and have different bodies that, like, push air through instruments differently. I don't know. It's fascinating to think about how our personalities and the physicality of ourselves transform the instruments into completely different colors, schemes.
The way that we worked this idea was quite structured with the musicians. We were trying to get there, to that emotion, to how kind of murmuring or what's being spoken. You know, there were two vocalists, and the other instruments were bassoon. There were drums, like a two percussionists and a cello. So it was quite a nice mix with vocals and some, objects that the percussionists use, and also a cello and a bassoon was kind of balancing this vocal texture that I was trying to reach. And so we kind of structured it into score, and then we worked very strictly on how each section of the play should be like, and what's the emotion there, who's speaking to one another, and and how this text feels. I'm not sure if we should call it poetry because it's basically a text that's working out some kind of a structure for me. But there is a quality in it that is, it's like poetry. And in poetry, when you read poetry, it's just like music. And so it was, again, a translation process that I worked with five musicians and their own capacity and sound vocabulary and materials to enrich this text into what it might feel and what you might imagine.
As an improviser, I've always kind of dealt with playing my instrument as a means to express myself as clearly and as personally and from a very natural place. And you're asking us to improvise within the confines of not only the character, but at least for me, in my case, like a vocabulary of which I'm not always comfortable, and I'm not always certain I'm going to get the sounds, the vocal sounds that that I'm expecting out of the blowout comb and things like this. So yeah, I'm dealing with this really interesting dichotomy of like trying to improvise within the context of the piece and the trajectory of my character's role throughout the piece, while also trying to enjoy myself as an improviser and perform as an improviser within those confines.
For me, this project is on a spectrum of like what I'll call literalism all the way to complete abstraction. And I would say that as the director saying now go, end scene, I'm kind of closer on the spectrum to the original text, and it's their job to further abstract what's going on. And so it makes sense to me. Like I feel comfortable about this, that there are moments where it is literal.
As soon as we performed it in Chicago this year, these questions came to me. It arrived. And we were talking this with other musicians. One of the musicians, I mean, all of them are kind of quite professionals in their fields, and they're trained as musicians. They're not just improvisers, but they do a lot of improvisation as well. They're kind of in this new music world, let's say, that's full of improvisation but also structure. So I worked with Catherine Young. She has a lot of input to this project for this composition, how it's going to be different than, jamming or just mere improvisation when all these musicians meet. How it's going to be five-person buffet, you know? Mm-hmm. That was a basic question that we worked on. And the answer we got is this very simple layout. It's not a, you know, fully scored out. Like it's full of sections and, you know, themes in between, that there is a mere open space for the improvisation within that field, but, you know, the musician knows what kind of tone or what kind of feeling she or he is going to, you know, be doing in that particular moment. So actually it's a piece, and it's not gonna change, you know, completely, but it might be worked with other instruments and other musicians and other vocalists, of course, and it might have its own alterations, and it might completely be a different thing, but it might have still, I mean, it's still gonna be five person buffet, because we have the layout, we know in which part the cue is gonna come to the other musician to kind of engage with a duo or trio or something.
I have everything from a camera to a wine glass to knives, and this is, I mean, to speak of translation in the text, these are razor blades. And so maybe I'll extend this definition of translation to, like, the materialization of an idea. And so the idea is razor blades and this thing going on, And now physically, there's knives in my hand, and like I got cut from them. And so this is part of the project to me, these materials that I'm working with. And yeah, what up, socks on the drum head, and brushes, and yeah, so...
So there's like a structure when, you know, you read through it and you see the cues, you see how that music's gonna change, because there's one fixed element to it, and that's the person who's doing the sounds of engagement with the furniture of these characters. Mm. So there's like these moments, he's doing the razor blades, he's doing the shoes, he's doing the fan, he's doing that, and that's kind of cueing everyone into their own material. But of course, in between, this piece might be worked with other musicians and other people, other instruments.
All these emotions that you're not able to communicate by words, that's kind of a little bit what I'm interested in. Or pre-language sounds. I was just talking to Carol earlier about how my son, you know, when the kids, they just before they switch to start actually speaking real words, they have this weird pre-language thing where they start to speak with the inflection of language, like ho, blah, 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 like a little bit mimicking what they hear the adults doing, but it's not language yet. It's not there, but the intention is there, and the discovery of what language is, but it's before it happens. And that's, for me, a super fascinating area. And all the areas, even when you're an adult and you know how to speak and you know how to communicate, all the underlying emotions that are underneath the words. A lot of people speak and they don't mean anything of what they say, you know, or they can't quite communicate what they really mean to say, because it's really hard to communicate, especially depending on the other person, the person on the other end. You think you're saying everything that you need to say, but maybe that person is not from the same country, and everything is really different. So there's all this in-between stuff, all this stuff that gets lost, because language is really limited in a way. I mean, it's a really, of course, necessary and beautiful form of communication, but how about everything else? And for me, sound and music is this kind of area that occupies all the in-between spaces of language.
I now realize more that the text itself, it's kind of it's full of made up words that mean nothing but mean everything. It might mean more than what it means, and it doesn't mean anything. So there are like it's like holes that I create in between real syntax and an imaginary one. And so it's, of course, it has a lot of references in literature in the 20th century, that a lot of people, from sound poetry to Zahm, Dadaism, and, you know, some literature people like Artaud, Beckett. I mean, all of these people are playing with sound to a certain level and meaning to a certain level. So, like, for me, I am not from a literature background. I'm just kind of flowing in between these mediums that I am trying to see these, you know, transactions and holes, or the merging points. So when I heard it as a music, I was completely satisfied with what this text was to me. But it doesn't sound like the text at all. So it's just like another layer of its own form. It doesn't have this sonic texture to what I have written at all. It's completely a different thing you hear. But it to me, it gives that feeling to the audience. I mean, to me, or, you know, it's completely, it sets itself free. It's not dependent on the text. It's completely another layer. But it has a source. Like, everything has a source. And the most important thing is about that fountain, the source. And then it kind of flows into other forms. So it has its own life in a way.
Because we're not because we made choices not to be more literal at certain moments, not to really articulate or use the text. Like, we have two vocalists, neither of them are really saying anything from the text. So we've made the choice to create a piece that's hopefully its own thing on its own. And I think that it came from this text, but in the end, it's kind of, it's got to be its own thing.